Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Shotgun snap to Jay Cutler with time. Goes to the back of the end zone, over the middle. The pass is caught for a touchdown. Touchdown Bears to Greg Olsen.
Play fake. Going to throw up the seam. And that's at the goal line. Touchdown. Greg Olsen made the catch. And a fine throw on the money from Kyle Orton.
Bears must get to the 45 for a first down. Cutler fires downfield. And the catch is made by the tight end Greg Olsen for a Bears touchdown.
This runs by Lawyer Malloy right here. His father was actually the head coach of Ironhead Hayward. Daryl, you remember Ironhead, right?
Oh, yeah.
58 yards from Cutler to Olsen.
Man, that didn't take long for Greg Olsen to become a star. I'll tell you that. All of a sudden, the bully pulpit of Fox football belongs to him, and he joins us here on the Bernstein and Holmes show on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. What's happening, Greg? How you been?
I'm doing well, guys. How's it going?
Things are good, man. Congratulations on everything that's happened to you post-career wise. And so my first question is, look, when we were in the locker room with you, we knew that you had the gift for gab, that you're a smart guy, interesting guy. But there's a difference between that and wanting to analyze games. So when did it hit you that this was something that you wanted to do?
You know, I don't know if there was ever really one, like, moment. You know, I think when I was playing, I got some cool opportunities to do some TV work. You know, it started with some regional stuff. You know, both in when I was in Chicago, but then primarily when I was here in Charlotte. You know, and as my career went on, I got more and more opportunities. And then, you know, I think in 2015 or so, Fox asked me if I wanted to come out and do an audition out in L.A. I was out there visiting a buddy in the off season, and then, you know, kind of one thing led to another. In 2017, they asked me if on my bye week I wanted to call a game as part of a three-man booth, and then I did it again in 2019 with a two-man booth. So, you know, really it was just about, you know, getting those opportunities, working my way up through kind of the local and the regional stuff. And then once I got an opportunity to do it on a national stage, I realized that I really liked it. You know, I liked calling the games as much as I liked doing the studio stuff. The calling the games was where the action was at. That was kind of the fast pace. That felt like you were kind of on the sideline talking ball, thinking fast. And I really took a liking to it. And, you know, fortunately was able to get a lot of reps and get a lot of experience while I was still playing. And then it was just the next logical transition when I retired back in 2020.
The hardest thing to do, and regardless of sport, is when a former player, someone who was in the arena as a competitor, then has the power of those words to talk about the people now doing it. And it's a major responsibility that's fraught with all kinds of potential conflict. How did you get past that? This idea with, I'm going to have an opinion, and if there is a play that should have been made that wasn't, I'm going to say it, and it's TV, and everybody can see it. I guess to put it simply, that you're not behind that mic to make friends of the players.
Yeah, I think, you know, knowing what it was like, you know, being on the other side and hearing both fair and unfair criticism, right? That's kind of the world that we all signed up for. And, you know, as a young player, maybe you're a little more sensitive to it. And as you get older, you kind of realize what matters and what doesn't. But the deal I've kind of made with myself entering this world is I'm never going to attack the guy, right? I'm never going to call into question their commitment. If you're playing in the NFL, you've earned the respect to be treated and talked to the right way, respectfully. And that's something that I feel strongly about. But at the same time, if there was a mistake, if the play was designed to in some other capacity than the way you see it, and if a guy's supposed to run a route at a certain depth and he cuts it short and then there's an interception, or, you know, whatever the case may be, it's our job as analysts to inform the viewer why a play was successful, but then also why a particular play was not successful. And typically that falls on the shoulders of one of the guys on the field. And guys know what they signed up for. And my thing is, if I say it, I got to make sure I'm right. You know, I got to make sure that if I'm going to call a guy for making a critical mistake or having a critical, you know, impact on why the play, you know, was a disaster or something, then I got to make sure I'm coming at it and I'm informed and I'm not just talking kind of out of my ass. I got to make sure I know what I'm talking about, but I'm also fair to the guy. I'm not attacking him as a person. I'm not attacking, you know, his career. I'm just saying, hey, in this case, you know, Johnny Jones, he's supposed to do this and he didn't. And that's why the play broke down. So I think as a player, that's all you ask is that the commentators and the analysts are fair. They're respectful. But it's my job and it's our job to paint to the viewers what's the mindset, what's the play design, and why the play was successful or not successful.
To be a successful player, like grinding tape is part of it. Same thing with being a successful broadcaster. Did that make like the transition to this easier because you know how to watch tape and now you're doing it and it allows you to teach the audience stuff about the game that they don't know?
Yeah, you know, that was always part of the game that I always enjoyed. So that, you know, to your point, that was a very seamless transition. You know, I always kind of joke the real difference between being a player and watching tape and being, you know, an analyst watching tape is now I'm watching both offense and defense. You know, for my entire career, I would watch offense kind of in passing. I would watch other tight ends. I would watch other offenses who I thought were creative or did cool things. But I was never actually studying the ideology, studying the formations and the patterns and really, you know, because I was spending all my time looking at defenses. So now, you know, after you're preparing for two games, you're watching two teams on defense and then you're flipping it around and you're watching two teams on offense and you're studying special teams. So there's a little bit more of like an overarching study of the team, which has been kind of cool, you know, being able to, you know, talk offensive ball with Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur and some of these offensive minds who you didn't really spend a lot of time as a player studying it. That wasn't really my job during the year. I needed to know what Bill Belichick was doing and I needed to know what Ron, you know, when we played against Ron, what he was doing, you know, so that's been really cool. I've enjoyed that part of the game, but listen, if you put on that TV and you tune into a game and the commentator, the analyst, if they don't know what they're talking about, it's very easy. You can't hide calling a game. You've got to understand what that team is doing, understand their personnel, understand, you know, different, you know, philosophical, you know, decisions and whatnot, because if you don't, it's very easy for the viewer at home to realize that you don't know what you're talking about.
When you're at a game, do you watch a live play with your own eyes on the field, or do you watch it live on the monitor, the same thing we're all seeing at home?
Yeah, so my approach is I watch the play live. I watch it. So my setup is I have, you know, obviously I'm watching it live from the press box, from the booth, and then on my monitors I have a regular TV cam. It would be, in essence, the production cam that you would see at home on the broadcast. Whatever you're seeing on the home broadcast, I have a camera that shows that. And then I also have like a sky cam. And the sky cam is on a little bit of a delay, like a 3 or 4 second delay. So I can watch the play unfold. I like watching the All-22 with my eyes live. And then based on what happens, I can then confirm on the delay just to make sure I know it was number 52 and he started at Mike linebacker because he had the sack. Because in those couple seconds, your play-by-play guy's wrapping up his call, they're cueing the instant replay on your telestrator, and then you know exactly when that telestrator camera comes up, you just confirmed. You saw it live. You confirmed it on the delay. So now when you go live on the telestrator to describe to the viewers at home, you know, why it was a sack or who got beat or whatever, you really are confident and sure where the guy started from, what kind of move he used. So there's a little bit of a process there, both seeing it live and using your monitors as tools, that in those 4 or 5 seconds, you can piece it together. So now when you try to explain it to the viewers, you're very, very confident that what you saw is what happened, and now you can explain it as such.
Are you harder on tight ends than other positions, and is that okay?
I don't know about harder. I probably watch it more than the traditional. You know, I think everybody every analyst that calls games has their own biases, right? We see a ton of quarterbacks. Obviously, a ton of quarterbacks call games. That's kind of always been the way it's been. It's, you know, there's a lot of them now, but Troy and Tony and whatnot. And they typically call the game through the quarterback's eyes. It's pass friendly. You know, it's very pass heavy. It's formations. It's pass routes. It's coverages. And there's not a ton of upfront stuff. The fun thing about tight end is, you know, we were the middleman. You know, we were very involved in the pass concepts. We understand the, you know, what coverages are doing and how that ties in with protections and how that ties in with upfront with pass protection. You know, all different stuff. So I try to see the game both from the inside out with the offensive and the defensive linemen, and then also obviously on the larger scale with the pass coverages and the offensive, you know, sets and you know, whatnot. So I watch the tight end more just because that's where my eye has always typically gravitated towards. But I try to point out, listen, when we, you know, we're going to give plenty of love to the quarterback. We're going to give plenty of love to, you know, I know you guys don't like hearing this, Devontae Adams and the wide receivers. They're always going to, now you guys don't care, but they're always going to get a ton of love. But I think it's really cool on a 30-yard touchdown pass when they come back from break and we can highlight. Yeah, we all saw the receiver go make a great play, but did anyone see the left guard and the left tackle pick up that blitz on that blind side of the quarterback to allow him to step up and make the play? Like, that's the stuff that I think needs to be pointed out more. And that's something with our broadcast last year, we tried to make sure we gave those guys some love too.
Greg, you got Justin Fields a couple times last year, right?
Yep.
What'd you think of him?
You know, I think what was cool about seeing you guys, you know, seeing the Bears and seeing Justin is I saw his start. We called his first ever career start up in Cleveland. And that was a tough game. You know, we all were there and it was a tough game and it seemed like it was a very conservative plan and he was kind of handcuffed and they really struggled protecting him and whatnot. And then we saw him later in the year against Green Bay in Chicago. And it was like watching a different player. It was like watching a different offense. He seemed a lot more comfortable. I mean, first couple drives of the game, Chicago came out and really was in sync, and he had some nice plays. You guys lost there at the end. That was in the Rodgers kind of – that was the I own you game and all that. But it came down to the end, and Chicago played really well, and so did Justin. So it was cool to see him from the beginning to later in the year – make that, you know, that young player evolution that everybody wants to see, especially when it's the quarterback. So I think the future is really bright for him. I think, you know, obviously they've got to get him a consistent offense and a consistent philosophy that he can grow along with. But I think he has a real shot to be a really good player at this league for a long time. And I think there was a lot of traits that you saw, even when he was struggling, I think there was a lot of traits that you saw last year early on that that if I was a Bears fan would be positive to see.
In trying to figure out his development and like how he grows from year one to year two, it's going to be hard because the Bears roster doesn't look like it's going to be really strong. So what are things that a player sees when we're talking about another player taking a big step that maybe a fan or observer doesn't? What should I be looking at in year two of Justin Fields?
You know, when you're talking about the quarterback position, you know, so we'll just focus on quarterback, obviously, with Justin. Everyone's going to look at the box score, and everyone wants to see 22 for 30 for 240 yards and two touchdowns, right? Like, everyone's so enamored with statistics and yardage. And don't get me wrong, this is a production-based league. You are judged by your production. But I think early on, right, and, you know, you think of the games last year, it's body language, it's control, it's demeanor on the field. It's, all right, you just threw a pick the next drive. Does the coach allow you to come out and throw it the next three plays, or is it handoff, 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 punt? What, you know, I think those sort of things tell you all you need to know, both about how the team feels about him and then how his own personal self-talk, right? Does he run? Does he take the field that next play, and the first time he has a chance after a pick, he just lets one rip and fits one into the gap? Or does he throw a bunch of little checkdowns because he's scared to throw another one? So I think it's kind of reading between the lines and not being so enamored with passing stats and where is he in the rankings and his QB. How does he manage the game? How does he handle adversity? Is he the leader that everyone on the sidelines is coming to when things aren't good? You know, those are the sort of things that tell you a lot about a young player. We all know he's talented. We all know that if surrounded by the right guys and the right system, that he can play at a high level. It's the other things that if I was a Bears fan, those are the things I would be looking at, especially if you're not a team that's going to be competing for a Super Bowl this year or, you know, however the you know, as you said, however the roster shakes out. So, like, to me, that stuff is so important in telling me what is this guy's future. And that's why I came away last year watching him. I know some of his games weren't pretty and they weren't perfect, but every time I left, there was something about him that I liked, you know, and I think for young players at any position, let alone quarterback, their demeanor and how they respond and handle themselves is a great indicator of future success.
We are talking with former Bears tight end and former Score regular Greg Olsen on Sports Radio 670 The Score. And I've asked before about how you were able to overcome this idea of, like, well, players don't say these things about players, et cetera. And I thought that was a very well-put description of that. There's something else about being, especially a lead analyst on this crew, that I'm more mindful of as I watch as much football as I do. And each week, you and your team of Kevin Burkhardt, Aaron Andrews, Tom Rinaldi, and Mike Pereira, you get access. You get a crazy amount of off the record, on background, at practice, in meetings, with coaches. I hear it in broadcasts, and now I think, huh, that sounds like something that the coaches are really pushing in their meetings, or that's a narrative that the team really wants out there. There's lobbying that goes on here. There's politics, for lack of a better term, that happens in these meetings. How can you be open-minded while also being protective and critical and aware of what teams kind of may want you to think or say?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think you see it with sometimes how teams are trying to push different personnel. They're trying to, you know, prop up their third receiver. They're trying to prop up, you know, here's the direction of our team. You know, we really want to run the ball. And I think some of it is legitimate. I found last year, granted, I've only had 1 year of this access and production meetings and whatnot, but I felt like teams were very honest with us. I felt like teams were very straightforward. They weren't trying to mislead, but there is a little bit of posturing, right? There is a little bit of, you know, dropping some nuggets here and there and, you know, and trying to control the narrative, especially if a team is losing, especially if a team's coming into a game where there's a lot of chaos circling around them. They'll try to control the narrative and make sure on the broadcast certain things are said that, you know, kind of goes, you know, hand in hand with what the team's messaging is. But, you know, I found last year that the teams were very honest with us. I feel like there's a trust where what's said to you in those production meetings, and if they're giving you a heads up on what, you know, what their plan is or what they anticipate the weakness of the opponent is, that you don't break that confidence, and that when you do mention it in the broadcast, you don't say it in a way that you're giving away state secrets, that you're not being disrespectful of either side. So I think there is a manner in which you earn the respect of the coaches, and the better you treat them and the more honest you are and upfront, and then you feel some of these guys will really open up with you and trust you back. So yeah, I think having the conversations with those coaches, I mean, last year having Bill Belichick for 45 minutes and really being able to talk, you know, defensive football and strategy and game management and all that. It was a really, I mean, it was a, for me, as just a football guy, it was awesome. I mean, I could have talked to him for 3 hours, you know, same thing with McVay and, you know, some of these guys that you always played against, but you never really sat in a room and talked football. To have access to them and get a look inside their brain, get a look inside how they manage a locker room, what their messaging is, not even X's and O's, but just team culture, what they preach. It's a really unique and a cool insight, and it's one I don't take for granted, and you just got to make sure that, you know, they've given you your trust with what they tell you, and you got to make sure you give it back.
What's it mean to you to be on the call for a Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, if you would have told me a year ago that I'd be calling Super Bowl, I probably would have said you were crazy. So in that regard, I feel super fortunate, and to be able to do it with Kevin, who I've worked a long time, you know, I've known him a long time. We've only worked one season together, but we've known each other. He called games of mine when I was in high school for the local AM radio station in North Jersey. So I've actually known Burkhardt for a long time. So to be able to call a Super Bowl together, you know, again, it's great responsibility for them to trust me with this. You know, there was a million other people they could have chosen to be their lead analyst for the Super Bowl year, and they obviously felt strongly that I could do it. So, you know, you want to make sure you don't let them down, and you want to make sure you do a great job, not just in the Super Bowl, but the entire year. You know, I want people, when they tune into our broadcast, maybe they hear things they don't hear on the others. Maybe it's a little bit of a different sound. Maybe it's a little bit of a different insight and a different energy. And that, you know, that's fun. You know, we're trying to make our broadcast a fun listen. We want to educate the viewers. And when people turn the game off, they're like, you know what, I'll check out these guys' games next year. That was next week. That was a lot of fun. So that's our approach. And when it gets to the Super Bowl, you got to just be true to what's kind of worked for you leading up to it.
When this was all coming together and it was going to become clear that this was the next step for you, to whom, if anybody, did you reach out and just ask and say, hey, look, you've done this at this level, or what am I getting into here? What don't I know? What should I know before I sign this contract?
Yeah, I've been fortunate. I had a lot of really good, you know, kind of resources of guys that I was able to reach out to years back. So this was probably 2014 or 15 before I ever went on my audition trip out with Fox in LA. You know, I had a chance. I got connected with Troy Aikman, and, you know, just had a chance to pick his brain and just kind of get some, you know, both advice about, you know, calling games. I never, ever attempted to do it, you know, and, you know, just little nuance, little, you know, piece of advice. And then also just like big picture, like, what is this lifestyle like? You know, is this something that, you know, I could grow into? What was your approach? How did you do it? And then a couple of years ago, when I was deciding whether to retire and take the Fox job and some other opportunities that I had, I was able to talk with Romo, and you know, from that regard, it was less about the mechanics of calling a game. I had been in the booth at that point. I knew what it consisted of. That was more of just, you know, what is this quality of life? Did it fulfill, you know, when you stepped away from playing and you stepped into the booth, nothing ever replaces being a player, but did it fulfill a little bit of your competitive juices? Did it give you that, you know, something that you can wake up every day and strive to get better at and kind of fill that void? So he was a great, you know, resource and somebody that I really took a lot out of what we talked about and how he kind of made that transition, you know, so quickly from being on the field to in the booth. So I was fortunate to have a lot of guys, and then just within my own crew, you know, just knowing Burkhart for so long and trusting him. I mean, again, I knew him since I was a teenager. He was a huge resource for me. You know, been doing this for well over a decade. So being able to just learn from him and Pam Oliver each week, you know, I was very fortunate that I was put with a very experienced team who they were eager to be good teachers, and they were great listeners, and they, you know, they didn't say, oh man, I don't want to waste my time on this rookie. You know, every week they helped me improve, and they took the time out of their day to work with me to make me look good. So for that, I was very grateful.
Greg, congratulations on everything. Like, whether it's your career, the amount of money that you've raised charity-wise, it's, I hate to sound like an elder here, but like meeting you when you first started your career and seeing this man that you've grown into, it's really awesome. And I think that it's something that you should be proud of what you've become. And this success story is pretty awesome. So congratulations to you, man. And thanks for joining us on The Score.
I appreciate it. It's been cool. I've known you guys for a long time, and congrats on your new show together. And I've always enjoyed talking to you guys. So I appreciate you thinking of me and having me on. My Adam Amin is who connected all of us. So that was Adam's awesome. I had a chance to work with Adam. I think we called two or three games this year together. So Adam's a great guy. So I'm happy to join you guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Greg. And he's right. Adam Amin is dope.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.